Kate from New Jersey. It's the Yes It All Nerds, a show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
John Trumbull, how are you, sir? How are you doing in the blizzard of 26, the one that you'll tell your grandkids about, the one that enveloped and engulfed an entire East Coast and froze us in time and turned everything into the frozen tundra that you see before you?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay, good.
How about you?
I'm all right. Yeah, I mean, luckily I work from home, so I didn't have to go deal with the car until dig my car out of the snow until like after work. But yeah, we got hit. Oh boy.
My area didn't get hit too badly, knock on wood. So I'm doing okay.
Okay, very nice. All right, that's cool, man. Yeah. Like I always don't look forward to having to be like, I know I have to do some shoveling. I always try to put it off as much as I can, but I also know that if you wait too long, the snow gets hard and that makes it even harder to dig out. So it's like you just have to kind of muster up all your gumption and just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. So listeners, I hope you guys are okay out there, wherever you're at on the East Coast. If you're in some warmer climate where you haven't gotten any snow.
Screw you.
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't like that.
Yeah, you got it too good.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you come out to the East Coast and, you know, get some character there. They're softy.
Yeah. You need some more hardship in your life.
That's right. You need some more strife in your life. You got it too easy there. Living in the lap of luxury over in Phoenix, where the fuck you are.
Yeah. Fuck you, Phoenix people.
Fuck you. And that's how we start our episode.
Yeah.
Okay. But
screw you, people in the Southwest.
That's right. Fuck off, Albuquerque.
Nah, Albuquerque, you're
okay.
He gave us Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and you know, you're doing Pluribus right now, so you're cool, Albuquerque.
You know what?
I can't say the name of your town.
Yeah. As soon as I said it, I was like, I regret. I was just trying to think of a town with a funny name that I could.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a good call. Funny name wise. Yeah.
Yeah. See, if Walla Walla, Washington was in the Southwest, I could have said that, but I can't.
Kalamazoo, Michigan?
Ooh, Chattanoogie.
Chattanoogie.
Oh, good times. All right, well, guys, either way, thanks for listening to our podcast. And we got some news, some breaking news. We had some updates about SNL coming up. And So as we all know, the SNL comes back to us on the 28th. With a guest host, Connor Story from Heated Rivalry fame. And of course, as I found out recently, he was in the universally beloved movie, Joker Folly Adieu.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He was funny. I looked it up and I mean, I saw that movie and like, I don't remember.
Oh, you did?
I saw it in the theater. And
All right.
And I don't want to tell you what he, because if I tell you who he was, it kind of spoils, you know, a big part. He was a pivotal part of the movie, actually.
Tell me this. Did he play a character from the comics?
No.
Okay. Then I don't really care.
There we go. Okay. Connor Story and Mumford & Sons. This will be the fourth time they've been on the show.
I like the Mumford & Sons.
They were on Joseph Gordon-Levitt episode in 2012, Taraji P. Henson episode 2015, and the Jason Momoa episode on 2018.
Jason Momoa's. We covered that one.
Oh, shit, we did. Hey, all right.
That, like, Jason Momoa identified himself as an SNL super nerd.
Yeah.
His monologue. Yeah.
That's when he came out dressed as cotton candy in bare feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Right on. Rock and roll.
He took his shirt off a lot.
Yeah, he did do that for the ladies.
Yeah.
And the chaps. And SNL recently announced that.
I don't
remember
him wearing chaps.
On March 7th, SNL announced that we're going to have Ryan Gosling host for the fourth time, once again, with musical guest Gorillaz.
That's going to be fun. I'm going to enjoy that.
This is interesting. Ryan Gosling, he's hosted before in December 2015, September 2017, and April 2024. He seems to have gotten pretty acclimated with the show. And, you know, the last time people loved him, they loved his episode. Mm-hmm. My only, I guess, little qualm or quibble, SNL, I know you're going to be tempted to do this. Please, please don't bring back the Beavis and Butthead sketch. Because I feel like they're going to try to do it.
My gut reaction is, yeah, that is better as a one-off.
Yeah.
But, you know, Washington Dreams 2 was okay.
As I
recall, even Papyrus 2 was all right.
Yeah, like, I'd rather
sometimes get another, it can be good.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather get another Papyrus sketch than a, because like I feel like that one of the main reasons the Beavis and Butthead sketch took off so much that it did is because Heidi just broke on a mm-hmm. level that I've never seen before. Like she broke and on top of breaking.
Because she was genuinely surprised by the makeup. I don't think she'd seen the makeup in full until that moment.
Yeah, so my worry is that they're gonna do it again, like the person who will be in Heidi's place, or maybe Ashley, like she won't break, and then people will be like, "Oh, this sketch is just okay."
Yeah, that's one where the breaking definitely elevated it as a sketch. I mean, I do think it was a funny sketch without that, but yeah, the breaking, it had the sort of Debbie Downer effect.
Yeah,
where, so you know that pushed it up to another level.
Yeah, so like I feel like I know they're probably going to bring it back and it's not going to hit like it did, but who knows? Maybe they won't and they'll surprise me and they'll have something else up their sleeve, but we'll see. And but I'm really interested in seeing the Gorillaz as musical guests because...
That's going to be funky. That's going to be cool. Yeah.
That's going to be funky because as people, if you don't know, Gorillaz, not a real band. Much like in the
vein... That's very cruel, Gary.
Well,
That's almost slanderous.
They're not like flesh and blood. They're like they're like the Alvin and Chipmunks or the Archies.
Again, so prejudiced.
What? I'm just saying.
Folks, I distance myself from Darren Patterson's comments.
They're cartoon characters. They ain't real peoples. All right. See, as soon as I said that, I heard how it sounded. I sounded like one of those.
I'm gonna stick the NAACP.
Wow.
The National Association for the Advancement of Cartoon People.
Oh, damn! Nice. Nice. Yeah. That is...
Thank you.
You know what? That deserves applause. Well done, sir. Well done. But, so for those who don't know, the Gorillaz, they're the brainchild of Damon Albarn, who's the front man for the band Blur, and Jamie Hewlett, who's a comic book illustrator best known for mm-hmm. Tank Girl. And, they've been around since, like, the late 90s.
That long? I thought that went back to like the early 2000s.
No,
this will be interesting to see how the group has aged.
Yeah,
I bet they've aged very gracefully.
Yeah, I'm sure they've, you know, they drink water, they moisturize. But mm-hmm. I mean, I vaguely remember the first album coming out when I was in college. I want to say 97, but I
could be wrong. All right.
But they've been around for a while, so it'll be interesting to see how. I mean, they've played live before in like Lollapalooza, like live festivals and big events. So it's, mm-hmm. they can do it, but so it'll be interesting to see them, how they pull this off on SNL.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
They're going to have to animate very, very quickly.
Yes.
For a live show.
Yeah. Get on it, Jamie Hewlett. You get to work. Get to the drawing board, my friend. They just released today, just now, on March 14th, Harry Styles pulling double duty once again. First time he did it was back in November 2019, and he's back again. He has a new album to promote, so we'll see Mr. Styles styling him and profiling once again on the SNL stage.
I'm trying to think of what I remember from when he hosted before, and the main thing I remember is he did that sketch when, which fast food chain had the spicy chicken combo that was like really trendy?
Oh, KFC? No, not KFC. Popeyes?
Popeyes. Yeah, it was a Popeyes spicy chicken, and he was like, "Oh, I'll go get a bunch for the office." And it was like a predominantly African American office, and they're like, "Oh no, you're not going to do that."
Oh hell no.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that one I don't remember. The two I remember him being in was the Sara Lee sketch where he played
must get rid of the toxic in the community.
And I remember liking that sketch and the pre-tape, the It's All in the Game, the one where Chris Redd was like anchoring it. It's like,
that's right. He was in that. Those were two good ones too. All right. Well, yeah. So he's got a high bar to clear there.
I remember the first time he did it was pretty well liked. And so we'll see if he if lightning strikes twice. And I'm looking it up. Gorillaz, their first album came out in 2001, so it was not late 90s. My mistake.
Darren.
A lot of college is a blur for me now that I really think about it.
Blur is a different band altogether.
Ah, nice. Yeah. My man. Oh, we cooking today. we cooking today, dog. You're the man now, dog.
You're the man now, dog. Yeah, that's another thing from the early 2000s, I think.
It is, yes. That's when I was king. So those are the hosts coming up for the next three shows. And also in SNL news, because SNL 50 just refuses to die, Lorne Michaels is coming out with a documentary in April. Focus Features is putting it out. And it'll be a documentary solely focused on the man, the myth, the legend, Lorne Michaels.
Wow.
So that should be interesting because, he's in the public eye, but he's also
kind of enigmatic.
Yeah, he's fairly private for the most part. Like, I don't know much about, his family life or, like, when I heard from there's that one scene in the Saturday Night Movie when they talked about how his father died when he was young. That was the first time I'd ever heard that. I was like, oh, I had no idea he lost his father when he was like a teenager. That's wild. I am looking forward to this doc. There is a lot. Even though we know him, I would say there's even more that we don't know about him. I would say. I don't know. I could be wrong.
It'll be interesting. I mean, we've read the Lorne Michaels biography that came out a year or so back. And, that was illuminating. I look forward to hearing more about him. It's funny that you mentioned the SNL, the Saturday Night Movie, because I just recently got that on Blu-ray. And I watched it with the commentary. That was neat.
Nice.
It was interesting to revisit it.
Yeah, still holds up.
Yeah, it's still a good movie. I don't think it's an especially accurate movie, but it's an entertaining movie, and that's really all I ask of it.
So. Yeah, it has flaws, but overall, I give it a thumbs up for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it's funny. They're like, okay, let's rehearse this sketch, and then they rehearse like two lines from the sketch, and then they're like, okay, let's rehearse this other sketch, and they do two lines from another sketch that wasn't performed for like months afterwards.
That's how rehearsals work.
That's how rehearsals work. Yes. That's right. And we do that 5 minutes before airtime.
That's right. It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. Oh, boy. So that's our SNL news update.
Big and, SNL goings on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, let's get into the meat and potatoes of this episode. So, basically, we're going to pay tribute to three men that passed away very close to each other recently.
Unrelated.
Unrelated, as far as we know.
Yeah.
That's Mr. James Vanderbeek, Mr. Robert Duvall, and of course the Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Yeah, we were, sad to hear about all of these. And this was originally just going to be a tribute episode to James Vanderbeek because I believe he's the first of the three who passed away.
Yeah.
And then quick on his heels, Jesse Jackson passed away and then Robert Duvall passed away. And I think we both felt like, well, they're both two big people that we got to pay tribute to them as well. So,
yeah. So this will be a compilation episode where we pay.
Yeah. So we decided to like kind of jam them all together and we're James Vanderbeek and Jesse Jackson both hosted the show. at various times. And Robert Duvall actually did a guest spot on another episode. So we're doing sort of a smorgasbord of SNL sketches this week. We're not doing every sketch from the shows that they hosted, but we're doing the significant sketches.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive in. We'll start off with the James Van Der Beek episode from January 16th, 1999, season 24, musical guest Everlast.
Yeah, season 24, episode 11. Like 38 minutes of this episode are on Peacock. They don't have the musical segments, which I think is pretty common for the older episodes of SNL.
Yeah.
Peacock, because, you know, those rights are a bitch.
Yeah.
The description of this episode on Peacock reads, retrieving data, wait a few seconds, and try to cut or copy again. So, it's a great episode.
It sounds like having internet problems.
I mean, that's what it said. I mean,
my description said 404, page not found. That's interesting. That's a weird description.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Did you watch the cold open for this episode?
I did.
Yeah.
Oh wait. What's the cold open? I watched.
It was the White House cold open. We had Daryl Hammond as Clinton, and he's welcoming Larry Flint to the White House.
Oof.
And it's Horatio Sanz as Larry Flint. And I totally forgotten about this. First off, I see like a guy coming in a wheelchair, and I'm like, is he playing James Brady? And I totally thought like that Larry Flint had done this thing. Like, because apparently Larry Flint had gotten some dirt on some Republican congressman, Bob Barr.
Bob Barr.
Because this is when the whole Clinton impeachment thing was going on.
Right.
And so Larry Flint got some dirt on some of Clinton's most outspoken critics to kind of show the hypocrisy, I guess. I'd totally forgotten about this story. Not the impeachment, but that aspect of it.
Yeah, I vaguely remember the whole Clinton, Larry Flint thing. I mean, of course, it's one of those things like, yeah, it was a big deal at the time, but then, you know, time moves on and things fall through memory holes and people
forget. Right. And, you know, this was kind of funny. We had Daryl Hammond's Clinton saying, like, so how did you find them? And Flint is like, oh, well, I hire private detectives to follow these guys. And he's like, no, how do you find those women who pose nude in your magazine? Because Larry Flint, if you don't know or don't remember, was the publisher of Hustler, which is a rather hardcore pornographic magazine. I don't even know. Is that still publishing?
I don't know. Kids out there, a magazine is basically something that used to come out back in the day. Had words and pictures in it on paper.
Yeah.
Paper is something that was in notebooks.
Right. It was sort of like a web page printed out on a hard copy.
Right. Ask your parents. They'll tell you.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm assuming Hustler is probably out of business, right?
Gotta be. I'm looking on Wikipedia now. It's apparently still being published.
What? I thought, like,
I mean, because it says founded July 1974, 51 years ago. It doesn't say anything about it going away.
All right. I just remember them being like.
They list every issue. Look at this.
Oh, what website are you on?
Wikipedia.
Sure you are.
Oh, wait, no. Okay, doesn't list every. Okay. No, okay, it's talking about regular features that it was a list.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. I guess it's still going on because it doesn't say anything about it ending, so.
Huh. All right. Well,
and the website is still active, apparently, so.
Okay. All right. Hustler's still out here hustling.
Every day it's hustling.
Yeah. All right, dog. I see you. You are the man now, dog. I know
Larry Flint is no longer with us.
Yes, he passed away a while ago.
Yeah, a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So Clinton's like peppering Larry Flint with questions about how to meet some of the models. And we see Anna Gasteyer's Hillary Clinton. I'd totally forgotten that Anna Gasteyer had ever played Hillary.
That feels right. I feel like she's at the time.
I mean, you know, the alpha and the omega of the Hillary Clinton impressions on SNL. We got
Poehler.
Poehler and Kate McKinnon. And, you know, so I guess this is sort of like the in-between years.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to get into it, like Jan Hooks did Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah, she did. Yeah, because she was still with the show when they were first running in 92.
That's right.
And like Hillary comes in, she says, "What are you doing with this whoremonger?" And Clinton goes, "Were you talking to him or me?" Which is a pretty good line.
Because Bill likes his ladies.
Yeah. And we also have the strangeness of Larry Flint making out with Hillary. Like they, the sketch implies that they're having a secret affair. The sketch didn't go over in a big way. This wasn't getting a whole lot of laughs.
Yeah. This one was kind of all over the place. And
yeah.
A little, like, it hits the same beats, like, oh, yeah, the president's a horn dog, and the Larry Flint's kind of slimy, and Hillary's an uptight shrew.
Yeah. And,
you know, the end.
yeah. So, I don't know. Like, Larry Flint coming to the White House as thanks, I mean, that's not the worst premise in the world. It, you know, has the potential for funny, but, yeah, this was just so-so.
Yeah, so-so. Okay, and then we get into our monologue here.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this one was pretty interesting because, like, when you hear Don Pardo announce our host's name, he goes, "And your host, James Van Der Beek." Like, he says it, like, in this over-the-top way.
Yeah.
Where I was like, why'd he say it like that? And then when he says his name again, he sounds like he's having, like, almost like a emotional nervous breakdown,
mm-hmm,
where it's like, "Ladies and gentlemen, James Van Der Beek."
Yeah,
when I first heard that, I was like, "Why is he saying it like that?" And then as the monologue went on, I was like, "Oh, that's part of the monologue. That's part of the bit. Oh, that's pretty interesting. I've never heard like them do something like that."
Yeah, like, you know, he actually cries out, "I love you, Dawson," at one point, and they have an NBC page bring over a gift that Don Pardo got for him, and it's like a pair of tighty whities.
Yeah, like the whole thing is that Don Pardo is obsessed with James Van Der Beek in a very awkward way. He calls him Jamesy. You know, he says, "Oh, you're very special to me, Dawson. So clean and untainted."
Yeah,
it gets real deep in the creepy town, boss.
Yeah, and the really odd or interesting thing about this isn't actually Don Pardo.
What?
Yeah, Don Pardo was, according to the SNL wiki, Don Pardo was out this week with laryngitis. So it's Daryl Hammond filling in for him.
Doing
an impression of Don Pardo.
Oh, I totally missed that. Holy moly.
Yeah, so like if you listen to it with that in mind, you can kind of tell. But because I feel like if it had been Don Pardo for real, they would have cut to him, you know, for added humor value. But yeah, we only hear him. So,
okay.
I don't, but it's so weird that they give the Don Pardo character a prominent role on a week where Don Pardo isn't actually there.
Yeah, because like there was one part where James Van Der Beek was reading the card that came with the underwear, the tighty whities.
Yeah.
The card reads, "Won't you let an old man take care of you?" And so immediately I thought, oh, it must be Don Pardo. He's an older fellow.
Right.
So, like, the fact that this is Daryl Hammond projecting his sexual fantasies onto James Van Der Beek, that puts this thing in a whole new light.
Well, I mean, it's Daryl Hammond playing Don Pardo, so it's still, like, in the world of the show. It's still
sure it is.
It's, and apparently they followed up on this later in the show, but it's not on the
Peacock.
The version on Peacock, yeah, where apparently Lorne Michaels has to step in when Don Pardo's voiceover is getting a little too worshipful.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, where like at one point you just hear the voice of Lorne telling quote-unquote Don Pardo to stop it, and he says, "But James and I are going to Venice. Please, Lorne."
Yeah, and it's a funny bit, but I just wonder why they didn't, like, kick this down the road a little bit for when, like, Don Pardo was there and could actually do the bit.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know.
I mean, I realize it's, you know, it's for maximum humor value. It has to be, like, you know, some young, handsome celebrity.
Mm.
you know, like a, you know, like a Dawson's Creek cast member or something like that. But it's like, you know, like, what's his face? The other guy on Dawson's Creek.
Oh, Joshua Jackson.
Joshua Jackson. Sorry, I was blanking on his name.
How do I know that? I never watched the show.
He hosted the show like the next season, I believe. So.
Oh, okay.
You know, they could have done it then, but I don't know. It's so funny.
So, I mean, this ends with, you know, quote unquote, Don Pardo, more like Don Parfo. Huh?
Nice.
There we go. Yeah. Oh, nothing but net. It ends with him saying, oh, I'm going to spank you. And then Lauren saying, Don, do you remember what happened with Scott Wolf?
Yeah.
Interesting monologue. Like I did like the way they kind of used or included like the voiceover of Don Pardo to sort of carry that. So I was like, oh, that's an interesting.
Yeah, it's a neat idea. I just think it would have been a lot more fun if it had been the real Don Pardo, you know? But
yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Apparently, if you go back an episode, again, according to the SNL wiki, Don Pardo sounded kind of sick in the previous episode.
Oh, so, yes, I think.
He had laryngitis this week.
So. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think I remember hearing that. All right. So next up, let's go to the National Spelling Bee Championship.
Yeah, this is, we got Will Ferrell hosting. We got the Spelling Bee Championship. We got Molly Shannon and James Van Der Beek as contestants. And the basic bit is that Will Ferrell has lost the cards for the final round of spelling, and he's trying to fake his way through it.
Right. So he asked Molly to spell, he just makes a word up off the top of his head, a corpuscle. Uh-huh. And then you said, and she says, what is this root? And, you know, can you use it in a sentence, please? It's like, hey, Fred, look at that corpuscle.
Yeah.
And, so it's just him kind of faking his way through this as best he can.
Yep.
It's a pretty simple premise, and it's basically, you know, it's basically all for Will to anchor and make this thing go.
Yeah, this is more of a showcase for Will Ferrell than anything. I didn't find it especially funny, and the feeling I got from a lot of these sketches was I didn't really know what to do with James Van Der Beek. You know, I didn't feel like there were any sketches where I was like, oh, well, you know, he was great in that, he hit it out of the park, and I've seen him be funny in other things, you know, I think
Don't Trust a Bee.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch all of that show, but I watched the odd episode or two, and like something I admire is that he was always willing to poke fun at his image.
Yeah.
You know, and that, and like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and
or even
like that, the Dawson's crying meme.
Yes.
I watched a clip recently of like a Dawson's Creek reunion thing they had a few years back, and he was like talking about that, and he was very good natured about it. So, yeah, he had a good sense of humor about himself. But I don't feel like this episode like showcased it maybe as well as it could have.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a thing where as he got older, he kind of
got his
humor chops a little bit more.
Yeah, this is like kind of early in his career. I think Dawson's Creek probably premiered like 98 or so, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, cuz I mean, actually, I looked from what I saw. He was my age. So like he.
Oh yeah, yeah. You said like he was like exactly your age. You were born like maybe just like a week or two apart.
Yeah, like that. Like I looked up. He was born March 8th, 1977. I was born March 15th, 1977.
Damn.
So I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
That is wild. So yeah. So I guess I was what, 99. So I was in college. So he would have been like college age. So
yeah
maybe the thing he was still kind of getting
like 19 or 20. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, maybe it was a thing he was still kind of getting his comedy chops
in. Yeah, I feel like, you know, maybe the writers didn't have they probably only had, like, a vague idea of what to do with him. Or maybe, you know, they were just like, oh, he's, like, the hot, trendy teen guy right now, so let's just write generic teen sketches.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, that definitely shows in the next sketch we'll talk about. But, yeah. With this sketch, it just ends with the two contestants being on to Will, like, it's like, oh, you forgot the cars, didn't you? And then he just says, hey, look over there. And he points elsewhere, and they look, and then he sneaks away. Then we get a freeze.
And then there's a scroll saying, like, this was the very first time in history that somebody was able to do, hey, look over there, to get away. And, a decent ending, but didn't have much to do with anything preceding it in the sketch, you know?
So. Yeah, it was kind of...
I was kind of eh on it too.
So let's go to Teen Pulse. Let's go to that.
Teen Pulse. This is a sketch, you know, a teen type show. And Molly Shannon is hosting. They're covering 7 degrees Celsius, which is like the boy band. Because this, you know, this is 1999. We're in the boy band heyday, where Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and
O-Town.
And O-Town and
98 Degrees,
LFO. 98 Degrees, that's the one I was trying to think of.
LFO. You know,
they ruled the world.
Oh, my God, with an iron fist.
Yeah, so we've got a boy band, 7 Degrees Celsius. We got James Vanderbeek, Chris Parnell, Chris Kattan, Jimmy Fallon, and Horatio Sands.
Yeah, so I think at this point, Parnell and Fallon were just featured players, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. That sounds right. Yeah, because Kattan came in at the same time as Will Ferrell and them. I'm not even sure, like, all of them are singing. I feel like maybe Parnell hadn't showcased his rap skills on the show yet.
That's right.
Is Parnell just, like, lip-syncing to this? Because, like, he could actually belt out a tune, you know?
Yeah, it was hard to tell, but...
Yeah.
They did include two singing performances in this sketch. That's my thing. I think that's my thing about this guy. I felt it was like a little too long. Like I felt like it could have shortened it up just a bit.
Yeah. A thing that really struck me about it was like, okay, Chris Kattan has like this sort of long wig that's all sort of like a curly-ish mullet type thing.
I think it's what they looked like. Chris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC. He had like the
But I thought he looked like Anthony Cumia from the opening. <show. laughs> And I was just like, that's weird.
Cumia.
Yeah.
All right.
If you know what Anthony Cumia looks like, that's like, Kattan was like almost a dead ringer for him, except for the facial hair.
Okay. Oh, Kattan. I'm thinking about Parnell. Parnell had the Chris Kirkpatrick hairstyle, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I was talking about Kattan.
Okay. But yeah, that I can see. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Cause you know, they have, there's enough similarity of facial features there. And we got Molly Shannon, we got Anna Gasteyer as another host. I was impressed that they put her in braces for the sketch.
Yeah, like I was like, are those real? Like, those can't be real braces.
Obviously fake braces of some kind. But
I was like, does Anna have a dentist on hand?
I don't know. I guess she just like slipped on some fake teeth that had braces on them or something.
That makes sense.
And we had Sherry O'Terry as. She's interviewing Will Ferrell, who's the guy who founded the group, who's like this Lou Pearlman type. And he's like, oh, yeah, I just finished serving my 7 months for downloading inappropriate materials.
Yeah.
And I still manage the group, even though I can't be within 50 feet of them.
Yeah. And then the camera pans and we see he has like security standing right next to him.
Right.
Because usually he does his searching for boy bands in runaway shelters and teen church groups.
Sure. Yeah.
It's the
funniest idea, but you know, again, just a very generic idea to put a teen star into.
Yeah, because I mean, this is it's a time where boy bands were ruling the roost. So of course, that just means like it becomes cool to just make fun of the boy bands at one point, where like that boy band backlash.
Yeah.
I mean, there were like a few funny things in here. The part where Horatio was saying, "Oh, I just wanted to dispel the rumors that out there that I'm 34 years old,"
right?
Which I mean, now that we know what we know about Horatio, reads a little different.
It does hit a little different. Yeah,
For the most part, this sketch is okay. I feel like if you shortened it up a little bit more, this would have popped a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't. You know, like I realize. Yeah, we want to showcase our female cast members too, but I don't know if we needed Molly Shannon and Anna Gasteyer and Sherry O'Terry as three different hosts or interviewers.
Yeah,
that would have helped tighten it up.
Yeah, I mean, I also did get a chuckle out of, because they, like I said, they do two performances mm-hmm. in this sketch, and the second one, they're all dressed in white and they all have eye patches, all white eye patches over their one eye,
okay? Right?
And then they're jumping on these like exercise balls
mm-hmm.
for some reason as part of their choreography. I was like, that's yeah, all right, that's something. Yeah. Okay,
but on the hippity hops.
On the hippity hops, and you don't stop. All right, so let's go over to Dog Show.
Bum 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 bum. Dog Show. Yeah, this was a sketch I kind of vaguely remembered from back in the day. I can't say it was one of my favorites or anything.
Yeah, this sketch has always been pretty odd to me.
It's one of those SNL sketches that is consistently like a little more odd than funny, and we will get to others of those as we go on.
Odd and campy too. This is a lot of camp in this one.
So
for those that don't know, it's like these two people that host the Dog Show. They love dogs.
Molly, it's a show about dogs and for dogs.
Molly Shannon plays Miss Colleen. Will plays David Larry.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize until I typed it out. I was like, "Hey, is that a play on Larry David?"
Oh, you know, honestly didn't think about that. Yeah, you're
it's
right.
It's gotta be right.
And you're right. Yeah.
And it's Will Ferrell banging on a snare drum while he holds his little pocket dog with the little top hat.
Yeah. We've got like real dogs in here, and they're doing a canine slumber party. And I'm normally like a big booster for real dogs.
You are
sketches.
You are. And
I am all about that. I love the dog court thing that Cecily Strong.
Yeah, with holding that pug that was like just freaking out all over
the place. You know, I love the sketch where we had the dog with the human hands.
Mm.
That was consistently funny. I actually once I think years ago, like Cecily Strong was sharing, I think that dog court sketch, and I said, like, you know, if they just changed SNL to like Cecily Strong plays with pups for an hour and a half, I would be 100% okay with that. And she would be like, and she replied, I was like, so would I.
Yay. NBC, so, get on it.
Yeah. Let's do that during the hiatus weeks.
That's right. Cecily Strong and a pit full of dogs.
Yeah, so this is basically just about, like, you know, little tiny dogs in wacky costumes.
Yeah.
They're explaining each dog's little quirky thing.
Yeah, and they sing songs to the dogs, like, oh, Mr. Ginger Snap, why won't you return my calls?
Mm-hmm.
I had a hard time writing down and describing this because it's just so...
Yeah, I wasn't able to take too many notes either. You know, we had James Vanderbeek come in towards the end, and he's in a Richard Simmons type wig. He honestly looks like Screech from Saved by the Bell in that wig.
Yes, very much so.
And he's like a dog owner.
Yeah, and I think at one point they tell a spooky story, so Will Ferrell holds a flashlight up to his dog's face so the dog can tell a scary story. Yeah, they turn out the lights.
That was a cute idea.
Yeah, like, I feel like they kind of write this show as they're doing it. I don't know. It feels like that. This feels like improvised.
I think to some degree it has to be because, you know, you never know what real dogs are going to do. So, yeah, I think they had to roll with it a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
But
this sketch is definitely... It's a weird one, like for sure. Mm-hmm. Like this is like a 10-to-1 type of sketch. It's definitely
Like I said, more odd than funny. But according to the rundown on the wiki, this was before Weekend Update.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd place that there, but all
right. Weird, right?
Weird one.
Yeah.
And then that's our that's our James Vanderbeek section of this podcast.
Yeah, honestly, like a couple of the sketches that are described on the wiki that weren't on the Peacock version, they sound more interesting to me.
Yeah.
Than what we saw. There's one called Laser Pointers.
Ooh.
Where Laser Pointers, the two guys, James Vanderbeek, Tracy Morgan, ruin a Harry Connick Jr. Jimmy Fallon concert. And there was another sketch called Frankenteen, an NBC exec, Tim Meadows, has created Frankenteen, James Vanderbeek, to fill a programming niche. So
that does sound cool.
That sounds cool, and you know, James Vanderbeek, he had a big forehead, so I can see why they called
him that. Damn, son. The man is gone. How could you?
Well, look, he had a big forehead. I don't feel like I'm speaking ill of the man to say that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I someone who is all forehead. Yeah, he had a lot of.
I got a lot of forehead myself. It's almost a five head. So
yeah, he had a lot of cranium. I will say that. And that's
a long face.
Yes. And that's our final words on James Vanderbeek.
And the good nights. It was nice. He thanked Dawson's Creek for giving him time off to host the show.
Oh, nice.
Which I thought was kind of cool. And that had to be kind of tough for Dawson's Creek, because he was Dawson. He was the star of the show. He had to be in a lot of scenes. That's no small thing to write your lead actor out for a week.
Yeah. Right? You can't be like, oh yeah, he's out of town. In this episode, guys.
I wonder if they just like wrote him like that week or something. I'm now kind of curious about what episode of Dawson they were shooting.
Yeah. Hey, Pacey, where's Dawson? Oh, yeah. he has a cold. Something, you know, as writers are wont to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, should we move on to the Reverend Jesse Jackson?
The Reverend Jesse Jackson. Yes. His episode came out October 20th, 1984, season 10.
Season 10, episode 3.
Yes, with musical guest Andre Crouch and Wintley Phillips.
I got nothing.
Yeah, I think Andre Crouch is I looked it up. I believe he's like a gospel singer, so.
Okay, that tracks.
Interesting choice.
All right. There's no cold open on Peacock. For this episode, it just goes right into the credits.
Yeah, actually, I think I know why, because I looked it up on one SNL a day. There was a cold open. I didn't see it, but it involves Jesse Jackson talking to Billy Crystal, who's, you know, what I'm gonna say.
I just saw it on the rundown on SNL Wiki.
Yeah. I heard you gasp.
No, I just got to that.
So it's Billy Crystal dressed as Sammy Davis Jr. We're not gonna look, guys, we just did Soul Man, so we can't do any more blackface.
Man, it's way more blackface than I remember in the 1980s.
I know. We're not gonna talk. Not gonna talk about that. We're not gonna talk about Daryl Hammond's Jesse Jackson impression.
Look, Billy Crystal does a wonderful Sammy Davis Jr. impression, but putting him in the makeup, probably a bad call.
Yeah, putting him in front of Jesse. I wonder how comfortable Billy was doing that in front of Jesse Jackson.
You know, that's a good question. I wonder if he's ever commented on that, or I wonder if Jesse Jackson's ever commented on that.
I don't know. I wonder if Billy was like, "Hey Jesse, this is, you know, are you cool with this, man? I don't want to get punched in the face."
I mean, look, I mean, you're going to come on SNL. You're obviously going to agree to, you know, make jokes poking fun at yourself if you're at all of a good sport. But yeah, that's an interesting question.
Interesting. So maybe that's why that's not on Peacock.
I would say that is 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
Because nobody needs that.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to, like, get grief over a 40-year-old episode of SNL.
Yeah.
Where a white actor is playing Sammy Davis Jr.
Let's just move right along.
Yeah. Well, you think they've edited out all the Jimmy Fallon doing Chris Rock sketches, too?
Oh, shit.
From the
90s? It wouldn't surprise me if they did.
Yeah.
I feel like
I would hope they would, honestly. Yeah. Anyway, Jesse Jackson comes out for the monologue. It's actually a very serious monologue for most of it.
I mean, there are some jokes scattered in throughout it. But yeah, it is kind of, at least the first half of this monologue. The first half of this monologue is very long and wordy. I mean, this is, I believe, during his presidency, his campaign presidency.
Yeah, well, I think it's he dropped out by this point.
Oh, okay. All right. So this is after.
Yeah, because this is from October 20th of 84. So it's right before the election.
Oh, okay.
Let me look.
Okay. But
I'm just trying to see if I can find when he dropped out.
Okay. But I will say this, like when he walks out onto the main stage, there's this, it's this cool looking subway set. It looks really cool. I was like,
I feel like the 80s SNL set.
I was like, oh, this is dope. Why don't we do this anymore?
Yeah.
But yeah, he talks about how, like why he want, how he decided to host SNL, you know, how he wants to get the message out to people any way he can. It's a little, I'll admit, it's a little long-winded, but there are some jokes scattered throughout. Like he said, he how he got 3.5 million votes. He raised less than $3 million. That's about 99 cents a vote. So it's the most cost-efficient campaign in American history.
Yeah.
He talks about the press and how he constantly gets put down by them. Like, press said he wouldn't run, and he did run. They said he wouldn't finish. He did finish. Then they mentioned this a thing that happened with a Lieutenant Robert Goodman. I don't know how familiar you are with that, with Bobby Goodman.
I didn't like do a deep dive into it. Now.
All right. So basically, I had to look it up to remind myself. So Robert O. Goodman, he was a former Navy, not former, but he was a Navy bombardier. He was shot down over Lebanon in December 4th, 83. And he was captured and held captive for a month. And with the help of Reagan, Jesse Jackson was able to get him back home. He was able to facilitate that. And he was so Jesse mentioned that and how the press would probably say, after hearing that, the press probably would want to find out who paid for Goodman's hotel room. Because, like, you know, the press was pressing. And then it goes on to this other joke he has about how he tells this joke that his friends told about how he would walk on water to get the Pope's hat, and then the press would type up furiously the headline. Next headline would be Jesse can't swim. Mm-hmm. So there are jokes peppered throughout there, but it gets a little wordy. Yeah. But then the second part of the monologue is where I feel like it's a lot stronger than the first half.
And that's the thing that I think people remember this. I think there's a clip of this in one of the anniversary shows we watched last year. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we mentioned it where Jesse's giving a monologue, but he hears like a humming or a buzzing noise over the speakers. And he's like, what is that noise? Like, and he says, people, I'm sorry, I'll be right back. And he goes to the control room. We see all the directors and engineers being like, oh shit, he's coming. Go, go. And then all the white control
room. White
control control room people leave, and all these black men run in and take their place just in time for Jesse to see them all there. But like, hey, what's up, brother?
By the way, I just found the information. Jesse Jackson was eliminated at the Democratic Convention on July 18th, 1984. So this was just like a few months after he dropped out of the race.
Okay,
he endorsed the eventual Democratic nominee, Walter Mondale, on August 28th of that year.
Okay.
And then Mondale got his ass handed to him in the 84. The only state he carried was his home state of Minnesota.
God damn it.
Or wait, was that his home state?
It better be. I hope so.
Yeah. Anyway, that was the only state he carried. He might have lost his state. I can't remember where Mondale was from.
Wow, Minneapolis has always been cool, Minnesota.
God, Reagan was so freaking popular in the 80s.
It was insane. It was,
he was from Minnesota. Okay, so he did carry for his home state.
Okay, yay. Well, there we go.
But, oof, that's humiliating.
He got trounced.
Yep. So, anyway, I like that gag of him going into the control room, especially with the setup of him talking about SNL employing so many black people.
Yes.
And they also, they're so, I don't know if ballsy is the right word for it, but they're bold enough to be like, to imply that none of the black people there really know how to do the jobs. He's like, oh, it sounds like you need more feedback. And Jesse Jackson's like, no, I got more feedback than I know what to do with. I got a buzzing. And he's like, oh, right. Feedback's bad. Right. And then when the regular control room team comes back in, he's like, oh, I'll pull your car around like usual.
Yeah, that was...
I mean, they go there, man.
Yeah, they really do. But Good monologue, I thought. Like the, I mean, the first half, like I said, a little wordy, a little
dry, yeah,
little dry. But that second half, man, pow.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So then we go into the sketch that I saw making the rounds, you know, after Jesse's passing. The question is moot. It's a sketch it's not on Peacock, but you can find it on like Daily Motion and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting sketch. So this is a game show. Jesse is the host. He began, the show is called The Question is Moot. He asked the contestants their names, what they do. We have Gary Kroger talk about how he's a toy tester. Jesse cuts him off. Julie Lee Dreyfus saying her name is Martha Rogers. Jesse says the truth. She says Barbara Wilson, which is a weird little aside.
Yeah.
And then Mary Gross begins to say her name, and Jesse said that's not important.
Yeah. So he's like putting all the contestants in their place right at the top.
I did like how also at the beginning they said like he asked Don Pardo what they're playing for, and they cut to a picture of a card. Don says it's a car, it's a lovely car, it's a lovely red car, it's a lovely red car with a radio, which is such a weird way to phrase it.
Yeah.
But then we get into the crux of the game where the question would be, when is the reappearance of Halley's Comet next scheduled to appear? Kroger's about to answer, and Jesse, of course, says, doesn't matter, the question is moot. The White House is locked behind cement barricades, nuclear holocaust machinery is moving in place. We probably won't live to see the next Halley's Comet.
Right. And I'm assuming that this is playing off something he said in, like, probably one of the Democratic debates.
I feel like it is. Like, maybe he was known for saying the question is moot.
Yeah.
And bringing up the fact that, you know, what questions he was being asked or what question people have on their minds.
Like, you know, why are you asking me about this? Why aren't we covering these issues?
Right.
Like, at one point they ask, which president is pictured on the $100 bill? And Jesse Jackson cuts in and says, the question is moot. Under the last 4 years of the Reagan administration, few people even got to see a $100 bill.
That's a good line.
Like, yeah, that is. That is.
And then I think Mary Gross's character says, excuse me, Jesse, but will we ever get to answer a question? And he, of course, says the question is moot. Yeah. Under the Reagan administration, answering questions is no longer a priority. Then he goes into talking about tax cuts for the rich and major corporations pay no taxes while the average American pays all the taxes, which is, glad we cleared that up.
Glad we're past that problem. At the end, Jesse Jackson declares himself the winner and he gives himself the car.
Right. It's my game. I run the thing, so I get the car. If you have a problem, you know, don't bother asking questions because it'll all be moot as well.
Yes.
Not a bad sketch, I thought.
Cute enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was all right. So then we go into this part, the Rappin' Jimmy B, because there's...
Before we get into that, did you also see the little segment they did called Funny Black People?
Oh, no, I did not.
It's sort of a thing in the show, and it comes right before Weekend Update, and where Jesse Jackson, he points out that SNL doesn't currently have any black performers.
Ooh.
And so he's inviting minorities to funny black people to write to Dick Ebersol, care of NBC, to demonstrate how funny they are.
Oh, hell yeah. That's what's up.
Yeah. And they actually show, like, Dick Ebersol on camera, like, standing off stage. So
just sweating profusely. Like, oh man,
you look pretty calm, all things considered.
But, okay. My mind, he's like wringing his hands nervously.
But you know, this is 84. We're in the post Eddie era, so
yeah.
You know, I totally get it. You know, you want to keep that momentum going.
Yeah, I
didn't look up when the next time we had a black performer on SNL because I had a feeling it was going to depress me.
I feel like the next black one after Eddie was like Chris Rock,
which. That had to be in the 90s, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, so after this era, then Lorne would come back.
Yeah.
That was season... Oh, actually, no. Denitra Vance, I'll say.
Denitra Vance. Okay. Oh, yeah, she was in the 85 cast. That's right.
Then after Denitra, I think. it was Chris Rock.
Yeah, she was that black girl.
Yeah, because then after that,
that's not me being racist. That was one of her sketches.
It was one of her sketches. Calm
please don't send me letters.
Calm down, black people. It's okay. I can. It's okay. Let's put down the pitchforks.
Do not take that out of context, please.
It's okay.
Please.
It's okay. It's all calm down. But yeah, because like then after season 11, it would have been the Dana Carvey, Phil Hartman years.
Right.
Pretty
white to start. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty white, and then Chris Rock.
Yeah. Wow. That's wild.
Wild. Weird. Wild stuff.
Weird. Wild stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going on to Weekend Update, or as they called it in this era, Saturday Night News.
Yeah.
Not as good of a name.
No, it's not. It doesn't roll off the tongue quite a bit. And yeah. I think they used to do this thing, especially in this era, where they didn't really have a set anchor man, so they kind of rotated people in and out.
Yeah. So this week it's Jesse Jackson as the guest anchor, and he's analyzing Ronald Reagan's answers in the presidential debate, because again, this is October 20th, right before the big election.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of taking Reagan apart there.
I'm happy. I'm here for it.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and yeah, they show a clip of one answer where Reagan seems very flustered. But you know, he has that charisma, so people voted for him anyway.
Yeah.
Yay.
Well, we don't
and
do
everything's
that
anymore. A-okay. and they also had a bit where Martin Short, playing Bob James, a representative from the Young Republicans, he comes out to sort of rebut Jesse Jackson under the equal time rule. Remember the equal time rule?
Yeah, vaguely. Yeah. Vaguely.
You know, before it was a thing that people did to you know, try and get Colbert to not air interviews.
Oh, boy. Wow, this episode's going to be a thing. Well, folks, we're going to pull this episode out and make it lighter and funnier towards the end, I promise.
But that was pretty good, where we just have Jesse Jackson sitting there quietly next to him, and he's unnerving Martin Short just by being there.
Being black, yeah.
Yeah, being black.
Just shaking in his boots.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get to what you were trying to lead up to a minute ago, rapping Jimmy B.
Yes, Jim Belushi. This was like a reoccurring thing he did, because, you know, that new thing, the hip hop, is all the rage with the kids these days.
Oh God, he did this more than once. Oh my goodness,
he did all this right. more than once. I don't know how
this is very white guy rap, where it's of the I'm a rapping guy and I'm here to say and yeah. you know that sort of thing.
Yeah, so like he pulls out his ghetto blaster, has a bandana around his head.
Yeah,
you know, bust some fat lyrics. Says, hey, Jesse.
Does anybody besides a white guy poorly trying to rap ever do, I'm here to say? You never hear that in any real rap songs, do you?
No. That's something, like, if you listen to, like, really old school rap, like, you know, like, yeah. You know, like Rapper's Delight, old school uh-huh. shit. Like, they did yeah. kind of rap like that in the beginning. And yeah. so I guess a lot of white guys are like, well, I can do that.
That's how white people imprinted on rap, and we, like, never updated
yep.
our mental image of rap.
Yeah. It's like that Fruity Pebbles commercial where like where Barney is a
yeah,
rapper.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that.
Yeah.
White guys rap yeah. like Barney in the Fruity Pebbles commercial.
Exactly. The cutting edge of hip hop.
Yeah. Wiki. but yeah, he says, hey, Jesse J, what's the word today? And of course, Jesse is like uncomfortable, extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we see Jesse turning off his stereo, and then he's kind of freestyling some dope rhymes, saying like, oh, I'm from Operation Push, and this kid over here probably voted for Bush. Oh, shit. Talking about how, you know, white suburban kids trying to act black, which I thought was something that kind of only happened in the 90s. So it was interesting to see this was going on back in the 80s, too.
I think white people trying to imitate cool black people goes back a long, long time.
Show enough.
Yeah.
exactly,
Darren. Show enough.
Show enough.
Show
no.
She.
Yeah, what you know about that, son?
Here's an interesting bit from the SNL wiki. It says Nate Herman co-wrote this piece with Elliot Wald at Belushi's request According to Herman, Reverend Jackson nixed a line about Belushi making words sound like they're picking cotton.
Oh, my God.
Good call, Reverend Jackson.
Who? He actually wrote that and was like, Jesse would be cool with this, right? Motherfucker.
Again, white people are clueless.
He'll be cool with this, right? They're over that. That whole thing. God damn, Herman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I think his episode that he hosted had some good stuff in here.
I kind of want to go back and grading it by a non-actor, you know, you got to grade it on a curve, you know, because even though he's a politician, he's used to public speaking. So, he is a little stiff because he's like kind of out of his comfort zone, but it's all right.
It's all right.
Yeah. I think the true highlight of Jesse Jackson on SNL is the next sketch we're going to cover.
Yes.
From when Michael Jordan hosted in season 17, I believe.
Yes.
It was a season premiere.
Yes. September 28th, 1991, Michael Jordan hosted musical guest Public Enemy.
Damn.
Yeah, son.
Damn, son.
Yeah, it's too black for you, y'all.
That's right.
This is the thing that Jesse is probably most known for on SNL, like you said before.
On SNL.
On SNL.
Include that qualifier. On SNL.
On SNL. Yeah. So during Weekend Update with Kevin Nealon, he came on to read Green Eggs and Ham because Dr. Seuss, a.k.a. Theodore Geisel, passed away that week.
Right.
And we have Jesse Jackson. All he's doing is reading Green Eggs and Ham in tribute to Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
In
his Jesse Jackson cadence.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sam, I am.
Yeah, and also, like, a little side note. So this wasn't the only person the show paid tribute to, because Public Enemy's second performance, they did a moment of silence for Miles Davis, who passed away that day,
actually. Oh, damn.
Yeah, he died on September 28th, 91.
Okay.
That's
cool that they did that tribute.
Yeah, nice. But yeah, I mean, all this part is Jesse Jackson reading Green Eggs and Ham. And of course, he says instead of
in full,
and all. But he says, like, you know, instead of reading from First and Second Samuel, I'll be reading from Sam I Am, and it's a simple premise, but the fact that he kind of does it with the gravitas of a church preacher, really elevates the material.
And this is something that could have been funny if they just had, like, say, somebody imitating Jesse Jackson, preferably a Black House member.
Right.
But the fact that it's Jesse Jackson himself doing it makes it all the funnier.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, he at one point slams his fist on the desk for emphasis. He wipes his brow when he's done. It's just chef's kiss. Mm.
Takes him to church.
Hilarious. The audience is loving it. He's getting so many laughs, and it's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that he had the sense of humor about himself to do that.
It's pretty fantastic. And you can see why it's the most, beloved thing he did on SNL.
On SNL.
I guess that's our Jesse Jackson segment. RIP, good sir, to you. And we'll see you at the crossroads, to quote Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Yeah.
That's good, right?
And lastly, we're going to cover somebody who's had some, I guess, minor flirtations with SNL. I'd forgotten he'd been on the show at all. Mr. Robert Duvall, who passed away at the age of 95.
Right. It's easy to forget that he's been on the show, because technically he's never hosted, but he did. Right. He was a special guest host on the Garth Brooks episode from February 28th, 1998, season 23.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, Robert Duvall was in there as, like, a bit of a ringer, because, like, we don't know how good this Garth Brooks guy is going to be.
Possible. But this was also something that the show, only this season in particular, they did it, like, three times. our good friend on our Blue Sky account, John Anais, mentioned that too. Like, he's like, he's curious why they did this three times, where they would bring in a typically dramatic actor to as a special guest, because Robert Duvall did it with in the Garth Brooks episode. Then later on, John Hurt would come on in the Steve Buscemi hosted episode. And then we had Bob Hoskins come on in the Greg Kinnear hosted episode.
Just, yeah, odd.
Very odd, yeah. And it's like,
I mean, I get it with Garth Brooks, because, like, yeah, you don't know how good of an actor Garth Brooks is going to be, because.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it turns out Garth Brooks is actually pretty funny. He was actually a very good host, I thought, in his episode.
Yeah.
And and just to be
especially
clear,
especially that Chris Gaines character, right?
Yeah, Chris Gaines, he's got no talent.
He's
weak. But Garth Brooks, he's good.
Yeah.
But also this is different than somebody coming on as a cameo, because like in these instances, like these guests, special guest stars, they had like bumper photos made for them, and like they were announced in the beginning of the show, special guest Robert Duvall. So like they were a host kind of sorta. Like a co-host. It wasn't just cameo.
So, I guess they were just trying something. I don't know.
I guess so. But either way, like these two sketches that Robert Duvall were in are actually pretty well-remembered and pretty well-regarded. The first one being Who's More Grizzled?
Mm-hmm.
So this is another
game show sketch. Mm-hmm. This one with Norm Macdonald as the host, where we just have two contestants and we're determining who's more grizzled of the two.
Yeah. Norm Macdonald comes in on stage as the host. Big round of applause, mainly because this is also the season that Norm got fired from the Weekend Update desk.
Ah.
I believe he just got, this came out in February 98. I believe he got fired in like December 97. So it was... pretty recent. And also I believe it's the same month that we lost Chris Farley as well. So it's double bummer. But
And Chris Farley, I think, only died about a month after Phil Hartman, as I recall. So
yeah, all bummers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, I promise we're gonna make this happier.
Yeah. Robert Duvall comes in and they're like, oh hey, how you doing? He's like, I've mostly been hunting and whittling.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we have Garth Brooks come out as Tate Mitchum, and he's like has a big old fake beard, gray hair, looking like
didn't recognize him at first.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of looks like a disheveled Kenny Rogers.
I was like, is this a cast member? And I had to look up who the host was, and I was like, oh, it's Garth Brooks. Okay.
Yeah, and I do like how Norm greets him and saying, hey, how you doing? Tate says, oh, I don't much care for you, and of course Norm says, a lot of people don't.
Yeah. And we got the various categories that they're going to be asked questions in. We've got war, hard times, bear attacks, ailments, dead wives, and coal mining.
That's grizzled.
So, yeah. So they basically just are given those topics and they expound on those topics.
Yeah. Like the question will be ailments. Question is, how are things treating you? Duvall rings in saying, can't complain, my leg hurts. Means it's bound to rain. Wish them doctors at the VA could get that shrapnel out of my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Just grizzled man talk. I think at one point, Robert Duvall just says out of nowhere, a lot of people don't know I was the first man to get a team of horses up Bear Mountain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I dig this one. Like, as we see Tate Mitchum saying things like, I was separated from our unit. Came across a bunch of Germans asleep at the field, bayoneted every last one of them. Didn't find out till later the war had been over for a week.
Yeah.
There's a lot of grizzled old man talking. The whole thing kind of culminates at the end where, they were talking about God and, I do like the part where they did the speed round. The speed round was good.
Yeah.
Where, they talk about, like, money. Like, I don't believe in banks. I keep my earnings in the coffer can.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about higher education. Never had much calls for book learning. Immigration. Mitchum buzzes in saying, got a strong back. We can use you.
Yeah.
And then it all culminates to religion.
Yeah. The day I set foot on that beach in Normandy, I never wished more that there was a God in heaven, and I was never more certain that they wasn't. And that gets even Tate to say, damn, you are grizzled. So, yeah. Yeah. So Wayne, Robert Duvall's character, is named the champion.
Yeah. I think that pause, because like Tate, Garth Brooks takes like a long pause before he says, damn, you are grizzled.
Yeah.
Like he's in awe.
And Tate kind of wants to be friends, and he says like, I buried too many friends to make new friends. And they say, Wayne, enjoy your prizes. He says, no, I don't need your charity. There's no such thing as a free lunch where I come from.
I feel like I want to say that line to somebody. I buried too many friends to start making new ones.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's fun because it's, you know, Robert Duvall. I mean, Garth Brooks. I nearly said Wayne Brady for some reason.
Whoa.
I get those two mixed up all the time.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. I don't see color, Darren. Well. Garth Brooks is, like, he does a good job playing grizzled, but of course, Robert Duvall is grizzled. So,
yes.
Yeah. He's the logical winner.
There. Absolutely.
Yeah. Pretty funny sketch.
Pretty funny sketch. And I did like that one line flub that one person had. So basically, it's Norm telling Robert Duvall what he won, and then the prize keeper saying he won some salted meats and a bottle of Rebel Well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. He corrects himself immediately. And I looked it up. The guy that says that flubbed the line, that's the show's lighting designer, Phil Himes.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
not a professional actor.
No. No. Okay. He's a lighting guy.
All right.
But, yeah, I can see why this sketch is so well-liked and beloved. It's pretty funny. It's, you know, grizzled old man talks. It's always... It'll always put a laugh in your belly.
Yep.
Good sketch. So, yeah, then we go into this next sketch, the second sketch Duvall was in. I just wrote... I couldn't find the right name for it. I just called it Lay Lady Lay.
Yeah, I think that's the name of it. Yeah. So we got Robert Duvall as a patient in a hospital. He's having surgery tomorrow, and it's like 2 in the morning, and Will Ferrell comes in, and he starts singing the Bob Dylan song, Lay Lady Lay, to him. He explains it's part of a program to sing that song at 2 in the morning to ease patient anxiety.
Yeah. And, of course, this just makes Duvall more anxious and uneasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and, of course, Will Ferrell tries to gently brush his cheek as he sings Lay Lady Lay, and he said, like, every time you stop me and interrupt me, I have to start all over again. So yeah. it that's kind of the beats of the sketch, whereas
and he's also going to hold his hand and give him a bath.
Yes, he's going to shave him and bathe him later
in
a minute. And of course it's Duvall really just fighting back against, just like, no, get away, I don't want you here. It's like, Lay Lady Lay, Lay Lady Lay upon my big brass bed.
I mean, this is real 10-to-1 land material. I wasn't too nuts about this one. Again, I feel like it's one that's like a little more odd than funny. So
yeah, I'm with you. It's interesting.
You know, it's out there, but it didn't make me laugh very much.
Yeah. So. And at the end of the sketch, like you know, he calls a nurse in, nurse played by Anna Gasteyer, and he's like, "Oh, what's wrong? You don't want to hear Will sing Lay Lady Lay?" And he's like, "No, I want him out." He packs up to leave, and then Duvall feels bad, admits he's, you know, nervous about his gallbladder surgery, and then ends up with the two of them holding hands, singing Lay Lady Lay. And Will Ferrell's last words are, I'm going to bathe you now.
Yeah.
But
he starts moving the sponge over his hospital gown.
Yes. Nothing sexual about it. He's just bathing a man singing Lay Lady Lay.
Yeah. A clothed man.
A clothed man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see what you mean. Like, this one is definitely 10-to-1 land. It's an odd one for sure, but I could see what some people would get out of it. I found it charming enough. I found it charming.
No, not my personal thing, but all right.
Okay. And yeah, those are the two and only sketches that had the late great Robert Duvall. And any parting words would you like to say, John, about Mr. Robert?
I mean, you know, Robert Duvall, he was one of the greats. I mean, I can't think of anything I've seen him in that he wasn't great in. I mean,
yeah. You know,
the Godfather movies, The original MASH movie is one of my favorites. Mm. He was Frank Mirrens in that.
Right, right. Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now, yeah. I'm a big Sherlock Holmes fan. He played Dr. Watson once in the movie version of The 7% Solution.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, you know, that's an offbeat Robert Duvall performance.
Oh, okay.
He occasionally got some grief over his English accent in that. But
yeah, I get it. Well-respected actor, did a lot. He was one of the greats, you know, put in the work, and yeah, he will be greatly missed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's the episode, guys. I think that's all we got here. So let's go to the blue sky. I know I mentioned John Anais. He seemed to be probably the only one we have here who reached out to us. Of course, he mentioned the special guest, stints that they did on SNL with John Hurt, Bob Hoskins, and Duvall. And then it goes on to say, odd though that the little trend may be, Duvall's sketches in that surprisingly great Garth Brooks episode stand out. Who's More Grizzled is a strong game show sketch in a show that already had another strong game show sketch. That's the old French whore sketch that's also pretty well known and beloved. And Lay Lady Lay is not on that level, but an oddity I enjoy. All right.
Yeah.
Far out. Okay. So thanks you for that, John Anais. And that's our episode, guys. Thanks for listening to our podcast. As always, you can follow us on the Blue Skies. You can reach out to us on the Blue Skies at SNL Nerds. You can listen to this magic on the YouTubes, on our YouTube page, non-productive.com. You can donate to our Patreon. And as always, you can follow me on all the social medias at Darin Credible, D-A-R-I-N, Credible.
And you can follow me on all the socials at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic. And so next week we'll be back with covering another live new episode of SNL.
Yes, Connor Story, heated rivalry, Joker folly adieu. Will they even mention it? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. That was kind of an infamous...
Oof.
I don't know if it was an outright flop, but it didn't do as well as the first, certainly.
No, God, no. It was, and no.
I haven't watched Heated Rivalry at all, so I'm not really familiar with this person. So, I'm going to be coming to it cold.
I feel like a lot of people will. It seems like a lot of people forgot he was in Joker Folie à Deux. I looked up his, IMDb page, and he's done stuff here and there, but the Joker movie and Heated Rivalry are definitely the two biggest thing he's ever done. So,
Rivalry is one of the trendy shows at the moment. So,
yeah. So I feel like a lot of people, this will be an introduction of Mr. Story, for sure.
For us non-Heated Rivalry watching people,
we're not in heat.
No, but I feel like we're gonna have a gay hockey skater too.
Yeah. So get ready. Gird your loins, fellas. It's just about to get hot.
Anyway, that'll be next week on SNL and on the SNL Nerds. We'll join us as we cover that whole thing. But until then,
Nerds out!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.